Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, once again to the Andrew Shatkin Blog Talk Radio Show. We left off with giving some background about me. I gave you the parameters of the show, and I'm going to now talk about what I was concerned with my background. I talked about political incorrectness and political correctness and honest discernment and intellectual honesty. I talked about Christian belief and how I emphasize this in this show. And finally, I am talking my political stance, which is conservative, but I follow Christ and his concern with poverty and poor people. I've said this many times. Jesus took on poverty himself and lived a life of poverty and chose poor people to follow him, his disciples, and his followers. Many of his followers were underclass people. So now I'm going to talk about my radio shows, podcast show and blog talk radio show. And these shows have a large audience. Many people visit them from all over the world. And the podcast show has been visited by people from 80 countries, over 4,300 people. And I'm very happy to say that many of my visitors are Muslims, dear Muslim brothers and sisters. I'm very happy to have them on board. As a Christian, I see them as having the love of Christ and deserving the love of Christ, and that is the bottom line for me. I wish to dialogue with them. I wish to understand them, because I know that Jesus died for them as he died for all people in the world, from the beginning generations to the people coming to death. Whatever their situation, he loves them and wants them to be with, as he said, as Paul said in his letter to Timothy, Jesus wills that everybody be with him in heaven. He does. He loves them immeasurably. And when I see another religious face, I see the chance to exhibit love and concern, the love of Christ, which is essential for a Christian to exhibit and to believe in. Next, I'm an author. I've written 10 books, Christian books and legal books, 2 legal books, Select Legal Topics, Volumes 1 and 2, and several Christian books, Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy. A book on the parables. The parables are wonderful. They're the mind and thoughts of God and Christ. I can't stop reading them. We'll never stop reading them. They are so, so, so great in their thought and content. And I've also written recently a book analyzing all 150 Psalms. This book has been bought by many libraries all over the world, and many individuals have bought it. The Psalms, to me, are the manna, as John Donne, the great Anglican poet, said of the Psalms, they are the manna of the church, and they are great spiritual food. Most of all, I read them in Hebrew in seminary, and I memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm in Sunday school when I was a young person. And the Psalms are immeasurably great lyric poetry. They are the legacy of Jewish lyric poetry. What remains of it? They're great. I can't stop reading them. And as I've said many times before on this show, I challenge anyone who will tire more of reading the Psalms in English translation or reading Dostoevsky. I think they'll tire of the Psalms. They'll tire of Dostoevsky before they give up on the Psalms. The Psalms are spiritually great, literary great, and I can't stop reading them. We'll never stop reading them. And a person who has not read the parables and the Psalms, they have missed out in their lives. And dear parents, will you please take charge and bring your children to the library and pick out Holy Scripture and read the Psalms with them and read the parables. I ask you to do this. I beg you to do this. Don't cheat your children of their legacy of thought. As Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, it's a great book. Please read it. I advise you to read it, How to Read a Book. He said the media, whether the television, movies, computers, or drugs, and he said the Bible is the foundation of Western culture. These are ideas that nobody's going to like in the power structure, but they are very important thoughts that for us to understand and employ. And I ask you, tell your children what I'm telling you. Inform them and raise them up. If they read the great books, whether the Holy Scripture, whether C.S. Lewis, whether G.K. Chesterton, whether Milton, whether St. Augustine, whether Bonhoeffer, Calvin, or Luther, if they read the great books and the epistles of Paul, if they read the great books, they will be raised up. A great book, as Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, a great book raises people. A superficial, worthless book brings people down, which is the present situation in our culture. A great book, whether Milton's Paradise Lost or St. Augustine's Confessions or the Epistles of Paul, raises people up immeasurably and raises their consciousness and makes them something greater than they could possibly imagine themselves to be. That is what great books do. They raise people. They stretch people's minds. They make people bigger and more significant in their thinking than they could be in the superficial books they are given to read in the school system, possibly, or in the culture. Next, I'm writing other books. I'm writing 4 blog books of my blogs, political, theological, philosophical, and others, literary. These blogs are constitute 4 books and will soon be coming out. And I am writing a book on the miracles in the Bible. Yeah, and let me say this, ladies and gentlemen: if you're going to read the Bible, if you don't enter the supernatural realm in the Bible, you're wasting your time. The Bible presupposes creation, resurrection, miracles. That is the presuppositions to read the Bible and understand it. If you don't believe this in miracles and in the supernatural, I suggest you go to another book such as The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger, which you can waste your time on if you want to. That's fine. Go ahead. Read that book. But I advise you to understand that when you read the Bible, you enter into another realm of thinking that is made available to you and that is there to raise you up as it raises everybody else up. The idea in any book is to raise you up and stretch your mind, which is what books do. I'm writing a book on the miracles in the Bible, as I said. I have written several other books. I've written a book on evidence and Bender's Consolidated Evidence. I've written a chapter on New York jurisprudence on criminal law, demands and notices. I've written a chapter on paternity in New York family law and practice. I've written 3 major law review articles, which have been bought by the State Department and the United States Supreme Court. The criminal procedure article of the Syracuse Law Review has been bought by the State Department and the New York and the United States Supreme Court and many, many other universities throughout the world. Academicus, an Albanian scientific journal, has bought several of my books or journals. That particular journal has been bought by the State Department and many other universities and colleges throughout the world. Now, let's take a look at what I'm talking about in terms of 2 of these parables. You have to understand Jesus' concepts here that he is working with and informing us of. He is, in the 2 of the parables, are the parable of the Good Samaritan and the centurion's servant. Now, these parables are very important because, number one, Jesus explains to us who your neighbor is in reality, is the person that helps you and aids you He makes that clear, but also he makes clear that he is not bound by racial or ethnic ideas. In the society that he lived, you had to be Jewish in Palestinian Judaism. But Jesus cast that out and said the outcast Samaritan and the centurion servant were people that God loved and saved. He made us understand that, number one, the friend, the person who helps you is your neighbor. And number two, that person is not bound by ethnic or racial bases. So let's read the parable of the Good Samaritan found in Luke 10:25-37. And behold, a lawyer stood up and put to him to the test, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, What is written in the law? How do you read? And he answered, You shall love the Lord with God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered right. Do this and you will live. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, He asked a very pertinent question, Who is my neighbor? And Jesus gave the answer that it was the outcast Samaritan who helped and aided someone. You have to remember, the Samaritans were a societal outcast in Palestine. The society rejected them. So Jesus gives an example of the Samaritan aiding and helping someone and being him the neighbor to that person. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side. So we're told that the Jewish hierarchy, and I'm not making a racist comment, I'm trying to interpret this story. He said, Jesus says, gives an example of the man who he sees his neighbor. And he turns out to be this outcast Samaritan. And Jesus says, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. And then Jesus says that the Jewish hierarchy, the top people in the system, a priest was going down that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring oil and wine. Then he set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these three do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, The man who showed mercy on him. And Jesus said, Go and do likewise. So you have to understand there are two points that Jesus is making in this story. Number one, he's making the point that as the person who is your neighbor, as the person who helps you and aids you, the person who is socially nice to you, who is a nice person, they are not your neighbor in reality. They are phony. They are phony. They are people who put on a face but do nothing. But this man, this Samaritan, the key to this parable is the person who helps you is your neighbor. I see that is the point he makes. The more important, he makes the point that this Samaritan, this social outcast, this black man, perhaps, whoever his ethnic background, Jesus was not a racist, and he makes clear that the man who is a neighbor, it is not important his race or his background. That is really the point he is making, that race or background are meaningless for Jesus, and he makes this clear in this story.
So
ladies and gentlemen, let's take a look at the second point that I made here. The second point, which was the story of the centurion's servant, found in Luke chapter 7. He goes to Capernaum, we're told, and a centurion, a slave, who was dear to him, and who was sick and at the point of death. When he heard of Jesus, he sent to him the elders of the Jews, asking him to come and heal his slave. So this pagan, this non-Jewish people, this Roman, when he's heard of Jesus, he sent to him the elders of the Jews, asking him to come and heal his slave. And when they came to Jesus, they besought him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation, and he built us our synagogue." So let's take a look at this story again. And it's in chapter 7 of Luke, and after he had ended all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum, and a centurion, a Roman soldier, not Jewish, not a believer in any stretch of the term, had a slave who was dear to him, who was sick and at the point of death. So this centurion, this Roman soldier, has a slave. When he heard of Jesus, he sent to him elders of the Jews. He besought the elders of the Jews, asking him to come and heal his slave. Again, this pagan, this Roman soldier, is a believer. He believes in Jesus, and he asks him to come and heal his slave. That's the key. This non-Jewish person, this non-Christian, asked Jesus to come and heal his slave because he has such faith in Jesus. And when they came to Jesus, they besought him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation, and he built us our synagogue." And Jesus went with them. When he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying to him, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you." This is a very humble man, this centurion. And the Jewish people say to Jesus, "This man is worthy to have you do this for him, to heal this slave, for he loves our nation and he built us a synagogue." And Jesus went with them, and when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends, saying, with the humility, he said, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but say the word, and let my servant be healed." The issue here is a point Jesus is making, that this centurion has very great faith, has very great belief in Jesus as God. And the elders say, "He is worthy to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation." And Jesus went with them, but the centurion, when Jesus approached the house, sent friends to him, again emphasizing his faith and humility. "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Therefore, I did not presume to come to you, but say the word, and let my servant be healed." So he tells Jesus, this is the key to this. He says he's unworthy to have Jesus under his roof, and therefore didn't come to him. He has great humility and great faith. And then he says, "Say the word," and his faith is so great, he says to Jesus, "Say the word, let my servant be healed." He's not Jewish. He's not Christian. He's a Roman. He's a pagan. He is a member of the Roman army. Yet he has this great faith. And he says to Jesus, "For I am a man under authority with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and he does this." When Jesus heard this, he marveled at him, and turned and said to the multitude that followed him, and this is the key of this entire story, "I tell you," Jesus says, "not even in Israel have I found such faith." And when those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave well. The slave was healed. And the conclusion is very important, where Jesus says, I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith. Again, once again, Jesus is not concerned with ethnic background. He is not concerned with race. He is not concerned with nationality. This man was a Roman. He was a Roman soldier. And yet Jesus says his faith is very great. Just as the Samaritan, his faith, both of these people gave help to people that needed it. And that giving of help showed, number one, showed that they were the neighbor, the true neighbor, and not founded on race or any other factor. Jesus makes clear that the true neighbor is the one who aids and helps us in healing this slave and saving the Samaritan. And Jesus makes clear this is the criterion for people who are your neighbor. Not that they talk nice, not that they sound nice, not that they dress nice, not that they look nice, or that they are nice. Those are meaningless, shallow qualities, and Jesus understands that to be so. He makes clear who your neighbor is. Your neighbor is the one who helps you, and that neighbor need not be of any particular race. The Samaritan was a societal outcast in Palestine, and certainly this officer of the Roman army was not particularly loved by that society in that day. Yet in this parable, he has faith in Jesus to heal, and Jesus does heal, and says he has never found such faith even in Israel. I hope you've enjoyed this little talk, and I think you should read the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke, and you should read the story of the centurion servant in Luke chapter 7, and take a look at it. And the main thing is read it. Read the words of Jesus. Read the events in Jesus' life. It's reading that will raise you up. These stories and these narratives raise you up immeasurably. Bring them to your children. Read them to your children. And they will be raised. The idea behind any great book or any great print medium is that it raises people up, and the rest of society, in its thinking, inevitably pulls people down, whether television, computers, or movies. You want to be pulled down, you want those things. As Morton Moradley said, they are drugs. If you want to be pulled down by drugs, that's fine. I suggest you have concern with your children and not let this happen, and not let them enter into the darkness that our society is descending to, darkness and ignorance. If you don't understand this, then you are not really paying attention to the welfare of your children, which you should. Okay? Stop going to the movies. Stop watching television. Stop going to bakeries. Stop going to bars. And start reading good books and great books, which will raise you up and not pull you down. Good night.